Idaho ranks 17th in the nation in the total number of opioid prescriptions dispensed per 100 people. The Gem State also ranks 5th in the nation for pain relief misuse. So if you don't think the opioid crisis is hitting Idaho, you need to think again. In 2013, Boise saw one death related to opioid use. I have a really hard time saying that word. In 2017, that number hit 96. Our recent workshop with lawmakers, city and county officials, as well as law enforcement, was held to help address this epidemic that is hitting our state. Joining me live in studio are Diana Lacciando, Director of Community Partnerships for the City of Boise, Boise Police Chief Bill Bones, and State Representative Melissa Wintrow. Welcome to the show, all of you. Sorry, I'm having that is a rough word for me to pronounce, but it is a serious word. And I want to start with, Diana, maybe you can take this. We've got some pretty high numbers. And in fact, when we were talking before the program started about prescription usage, can you talk about that?
Certainly. So as you mentioned, Idaho ranks pretty high in the prescriptions per person. And a really startling statistic to me was to note that in 2017, 460,000 prescriptions for opioids were issued in Ada County, and we only have about 450,000 people in the county as a whole. So that's more than enough for every man, woman, and child living in our county.
And then what happens once they're out there is the next question. And Chief Bones, maybe you can talk about this, because when you do get a prescription medication, you know, people dump it down the toilet if you don't need it anymore. But we're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, we've got a drop-off spot down at BSU.
Right.
Got one at the police station. But yes, that would be better than what sometimes happens.
Right. Also, when we talk about the number of deaths, 2013, the city of Boise saw one death related to this. 96 is projected for 2017 as those numbers come in. What are you seeing out there?
Well, one small correction. We've counted 96 for sure. When the results come in, unfortunately, we believe we'll top 100. So we'll
really
probably be around 115 or 117 for 2017. So, and obviously, that is a huge number when you've looked at that. We never, prior to 2013, ever had anything that exceeded the single digits in deaths lost to opioids. So for us to be getting those type of numbers is extremely scary to us. And it's a wake-up call. Right. But we have an opportunity. And that's what really the summit's about. Idaho's been one of the last places to see this epidemic try to reach in and try to take over. And we've got it. We got a chance to learn from the best practices, successes and failures across the country, and stop it from losing the battle.
And Diana, you're the director of community partnerships for the city of Boise, and you were tasked with putting this summit together, which happened last week, I believe.
It did. So I was tasked with doing this on behalf of the city of Boise, but we actually tried to bring a regional approach, knowing that this is an issue that really crosses boundaries. So there's also an organization called the Treasure Valley Partnership that encompasses mayors and county commissioners across the Treasure Valley. And with their blessing, we brought together law enforcement, medical community, schools, all levels of government, and even members of the media to really try to take a public health approach to addressing this. Because as Chief Bones said, you know, we're not at the level of a West Virginia or Ohio yet, but we don't like the trajectory. And so we want to think about how we can get ahead of it.
And Representative Wintrow, from the legislative standpoint, you went to the summit basically to listen and to learn more. But what can we do?
Good question, Gemma. I want to also come back to when you said, what can we do when the drugs are out there? As the chief said, there are prescription take-back programs in the police agencies, but also the Board of Pharmacy has been doing a great job. I sit on the Millennium Fund Committee, and we have in the past years given money for prescription take-backs in pharmacies, which sometimes people are a little more apt to go there and get rid of those, which is great, especially when we see the numbers growing in youth.
Mm-hmm.
As far as in the Idaho Youth Risk Behavior Survey, we see youth, the increased number of opioids that they're using as far as abuse goes. So I wanted to put that out there. As a legislator, I attended the summit because it is the state's role to listen and learn and to work and collaborate with local agencies. And sitting on Criminal Justice Commission, Millennium Fund, et cetera, we've got to find better resources than jail to treat folks who are addicted to opioids and other drugs. And I visited a number of prisons, and my heart breaks to see the number of folks who are in jail that probably shouldn't have been and could have gone to a treatment facility instead of that. So I'm very interested in listening and learning and trying to roll up the sleeves in the role of the state to say, what can we do at the state level to support local communities around the state?
You bring up an interesting point, though, saying treatment facilities, because we do not have enough beds for that. And Chief Bones, do you run into that when your officers are, you know, boots on the ground out there? And I'm sure you see you're arresting people probably who are repeat offenders.
Absolutely. So as you're running into people that may be crying for help and trying to get them into those resources, even were they to have insurance and have the funds to be able to get into a bed when they're ready, get access to that treatment, it's extremely limited in the Treasure Valley. And if people don't have those resources, it's almost non-existent for somebody to be able to get the resources they need. And this is people don't understand the level of addiction that comes with opioids. This is not the traditional, oh, I can take it or leave it. And even somebody that knows somebody that suffers from severe alcoholism, you're not familiar with the amount of pain and what it does to a human body and the mind and what a person will do to meet that addiction. Once they're suffering from that medical condition of the addiction, they're trapped and they need somebody in a system to help them get out of that.
I'm speaking with Diana Lachianda, Boise City Director of Community Partnerships, Boise Chief of Police Bill Bones, and State Representative Melissa Wintrow about the opioid crisis hitting the Gem State. If you have questions or comments, you can always email us at idahomatters@boisestate.edu, tweet us, KBSX 91.5, or get on our Facebook page, Boise State Public Radio. And we do have a question from a listener. AK, she had two questions. How much is this costing us? And where is the problem most concentrated? Who would like to start?
How about I take the problem most concentrated and Diana will take the cost? So, because that lets me clear up a real big fallacy that exists out there. And it's one of the best things your listeners can do is to learn what the face of the opioid crisis is. First of all, 80% of the people that are addicted to opioids in the United States became addicted due to prescription medication. Mm-hmm. This is not somebody that for the most part, that started in a back alley and worked their way up through the drugs and injected heroin. This is people that were taking prescriptions for back pain. And if you don't know somebody, if you don't believe you know somebody that's addicted to opioids, I'm here to guarantee you do. There are many people in your neighborhoods. And it's not the traditional face that you think of drug abuse. This hits all levels of society, every person that's out there. So the number of people that we're seeing addicted is extreme compared to whatever any of the past drug trends that we've seen come through the United States. And that's why you're seeing the type of loss of life across the U.S. And seeing the level of impact it can have on a community. And it really does affect several different, whether it's healthcare, jail, work performance, and I'll let Diana take that.
Thanks, Chief. So I don't think we have a full analysis on all of the impacts because you have to look really at multiple layers of government. For example, Child Protective Services, you know, what is it costing on that level? But just one sliver of it, we know that it costs between $3,000 and $5,000 for somebody to detox at an ER, for example. And if they don't have access to insurance, we're all bearing those costs through the County Indigent Fund. Whereas if someone were to detox at Allenbaugh House, for example, which has limited beds, that's in the $300 to $400 range. So there are just different opportunities to look at it differently. That's one sliver, but it's certainly increasing costs sort of up and down the spectrum.
And Chief Bones, in the time that you've been Chief of Police, I am assuming you have seen this, and this is not surprising to you. Do you believe we're at an epidemic level at this point?
Idaho is on the verge of reaching into that crisis point, but we haven't tipped the scale. When you look at the Southeast United States and you look at the cities across, and I talk to fellow chiefs across the country, they are completely underwater. All of their resources are gone, and they are struggling. They're having to totally change their approach and do away with services for other areas just to address the opioid crisis. we have an ability here in Idaho because we've been able to start and have this conversation and amazed at the amount of people that are out there providing services, that now we have a chance to knit together. If we can just fill those gaps, I think we do have an opportunity. I do think the gap of service for people past that point, past the crisis moment of getting somebody into a program that can walk them through the recovery process is a gap we've got to fill now. We cannot turn this into building prison after prison after prison. We have to provide resources for people. And there are bad people that are using this, right, this level of addiction. There are criminal people that are evil that use that because they know they've got that leverage point. We need to put them in jail, the dealers, the people that are taking advantage. We need to recognize there is a group of people out here that are suffering from an addiction, and we have got to divert them away from that traditional law enforcement program into a treatment model.
And Representative Wintrow, is this where the legislature comes in? Because we truly are, we do not have enough treatment centers in our state.
That's correct, Gemma. I think as a legislator, it's our responsibility to convene these kind of stakeholder groups. And I'm just so happy that I was able to attend last week to get my eyes opened a little bit. But I commend the stakeholders and the community partners in this area for doing that because, as the chief said, this provides an opportunity for them to really assess the terrain, what is going on, what resources do we have, and how do we connect them to do the best we can. Now, the state needs to take it to the next level. We need to look at Medicaid expansion. We need to look at healthcare continuum altogether. And we need to be convening those meetings. As a member of the Millennium Fund Committee, there are funds there that we can utilize. So I would like to urge my colleagues to come to the table and invite their stakeholder groups to the table and see what role the state can play, because we can. The money's there. We can invest it to get the biggest bang for our buck here instead of putting people in prison.
Well, when we come back, we are going to continue this conversation. First, though, I want our listeners to hear some comments from Ron, who became addicted after a life-threatening motorcycle accident back in October, and Ashley, who tried opioids in high school just on a fluke and quickly became addicted.
I was taking the drugs and enjoying it, but I wasn't experiencing the pain. As the drugs would wear off, I wasn't in pain, you know, looking for my next, you know, okay, another hour and a half and I get to take my next dose. I wasn't in pain, but I certainly was looking forward to that next dose. You know, it felt great. It was enjoyable. It was nice. I could sleep. But, you know, yeah.
I had this, like, drive that was above, like, almost anything else. You know, like, I left my family behind to get this stuff, and, like, you know, there was this drive to, like, not get sick, because I was at a point where, like, if I didn't, you know, take it every so often, like, I would go into withdrawals, and I would get sick, and it was, I knew that I had something going, but I don't think I really realized it till I had some friends overdose that, like, I was able to save with Narcan. But I think it was, like, in Denver when I really realized how, like, you know, I was homeless, and I couldn't get on my feet, and I couldn't, like, do anything about it. It kind of started to, like, really dawn then, because I was so tired.
We've been discussing the opioid crisis and how it's hitting Idaho. We are continuing that conversation. If you have any questions or comments, you can always email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu, tweet us, KBSX91.5, or find us on Facebook. My guest today are Boise Chief of Police Bill Bone, State Representative Melissa Wintrow, and Director of Community Partnerships for the City of Boise, Diana Lacciando. They recently were at a summit discussing these issues. We had many listeners reach out to us with questions. Some listeners shared their personal stories with us. Here is more from my interviews with Ron, who became addicted after a life-threatening motorcycle accident, and Ashley, who became addicted after using in high school.
I decided, you know, really, I'm just taking a very small amount. I'm just going to stop taking them altogether. And that lasted a couple days, and it was miserable. I couldn't sleep at night. I had this terrible sinking, pulling feeling in my chest. I've got to take the pills. And so I allowed myself for several weeks just to take one pill just before I went to bed, and that allowed me to sleep. But something about my mind and being addicted, I needed to have that in the quiet of the night. I was just miserable. And then finally, after about 2 weeks, I said, it's enough. I'm just going to quit. And I know that it'll be painful for a couple of days, but I can get through this. And it did. It lasted about 5 days of just kind of being miserable and grumpy and upset. And now it's gone.
I just got curious and spontaneous, and it just happened. And that can happen to, like, anybody, you know? Like, it can happen to a businessman. It can happen to, like, you know, you don't have to start homeless or start in poverty. It can happen to anybody. It can happen, like, the one time. It can be, like, it can just trigger that thing in your head that's like, oh, yeah, this is what you've been looking for your entire life.
Both Ron and Ashley are clean now. Ashley's been clean for 18 months. This has been a process. She's in her early 20s and just on a fluke was given a pain medication. A friend had a pain relief medication in high school and said, you want one? And she took one. And she, during my interview with Ashley, she said, education. We need to educate people. And Diana, not only education, but what about the stigma around it? I mean, because Ashley came from a good home. You know, Ron's a professional, and this is happening.
Absolutely. This is an issue that is really cross-cutting across all demographics. It is, you know, professionals, young people, old people, all races and ethnicities. And so we have to get away from this idea that, you know, somebody who's addicted is a certain type of person. It could happen to any one of us, and it is. We're seeing that in this community. But the second aspect of stigma is really making it safe and acceptable for people to highlight that they have this problem, first of all, and to get out there and accept treatment. And one of the areas is this form of medication-assisted treatment is one very successful way to help people reduce off of opioids. But too often we have stigmatized methadone clinics or the use of Suboxone. So that's an important component.
And we just had a listener with a Facebook question wanting to know if Idaho is involved with the lawsuit with Big Pharma. Does anyone have knowledge of that?
I guess I do. We're not involved at this time, but the belief is once the settlement comes out that Idaho would participate in that. It would follow very much the tobacco industry. And so there is a hope that that results in substantial funding for the future. But it's many, many years away, and we don't have time to wait. We've got to get on this now, but that is for the future a hope for a funding source.
And another listener, Rocky, wrote in wanting to know where do drug companies come into this equation since, as you said, Chief Bones, most abuse starts with prescription medication.
Yes, and the history was that doctors were told by pharmaceutical reps, here's this great pill. It's non-addictive. This will take away people's pain. It was sold as a magic pill. And at this point, it's become a multi-billion, trillion dollar probably. I don't know the number. But I mean, I can tell you that the vast majority of opioids are consumed right here in the United States. So I can't remember the number, but I think it's 85% of the opioids in the world are consumed in America.
US? Oh, my goodness. And Diana, one thing I noticed with this summit was some of the statistics about youth and teenagers. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because we're seeing this, and Chief Bones, I'm sure you're seeing this, with more young people trying opioids.
So one of the statistics that was shared is that in Idaho, 1 in 7 high school students have misused prescription drugs. So, you know, they may be accessing it from a friend who's gotten it from a parent, you know, various prescriptions laying around the house. And this is definitely a concern at our high schools. Boise School District and West Ada School District were participating in our summit and really thinking about how do we create a unified public awareness campaign about this? Because for a lot of kids, they think, oh, it's a pill, and maybe my parent has to take it, so it's not a big deal. But we really need to be sharing the extent of how challenging and problematic this is with our youth.
We get a small percentage, and there's a chunk of youth that got injured, especially sports kids that are in, that received an addiction. But most of them, it's got to be safe because it's prescription, so it was okay to take. It wasn't like an illegal drug. And so they take it believing that there is no problems. And that leads very quickly, especially with youth, that can lead to a very quick path to addiction. As
Ashley said, yes. In hers. So Representative Wintrow, then that comes back then to where does the state, where do our legislators come in on this? because, you know, one listener said, you know, personal accountability has to play into this. And I think everyone would agree that, yes, you have to be accountable for certain things. But this is more addictive and quicker than people realize.
Agreed. I think we need to listen and learn from these stakeholders and create the best solutions that get the biggest bang for our buck. So sitting on JFAC, the Joint Finance and Appropriation Committee, we need to invest in the treatment facilities and the education programs. As Diana just said, I'm seeing some dent there, but we need to make sure people understand the power of these drugs. We need prescription take back. So when you're finished with the prescription and you have anything left, you get it out of your medicine cabinet. That's why the pharmacies now are trying to expand their prescription take back program. So it's easier to go to a pharmacy and drop those off. We need to educate folks who are using them. There's some programs right now through the Idaho grant that we're receiving to educate patients when they receive them. In fact, we just appropriated money through the committee last year to expand a program in eastern Idaho where we see a large problem with opioid abuse to educate patients before they leave the hospital, which I'm real pleased that we did that. So I think at the state level, again, we don't want to rush into things and have unintended consequences, but we need to talk to the people on the ground every day, law enforcement, medical staff, city officials, et cetera. And we need to bring those people to the table and say, what is it we can do to support and what barriers do we need to get mm-hmm. out of the way so we can support our citizens in the best way? And we need to be role models in destigmatizing this epidemic.
And I don't want to in any way throw medical professionals under the bus. With that said, why are they prescribing such vast amounts of an opioid, like let's say in Ron's case, I mean, he had life-threatening injuries. He had to be on this. But when do we, where do we draw the line at, you know, do you need a whole bottle or do you just need a couple?
I'll take that. So I think some of it really comes back to the medical education and working with our providers. And I will say St. Luke's and St. Al's were both at the summit and are really trying to lead the way in getting ahead of this. But some of it comes back to how we think about pain in this country. So many medical professionals were trained that pain is the fifth vital sign. And that then leads into a reimbursement models that were tied to patient pain satisfaction. And as the chief noted, opioids were non-addictive. Ultimately, then, when folks are trying to move off of these prescriptions, we've created a scenario in this country where the treatment options, such as Suboxone and methadone, are more expensive than utilizing heroin. So we've created some real disincentives for people to be able to get off of this safely. So we need to be looking at insurance coverage that looks at alternative therapies for pain. So there's not just sort of one option for a provider when someone does have a very serious motorcycle accident or other really challenging issue.
Chief Bones, do you believe that we can somehow fix this problem before it's too late, or are we headed down a path that we can't get off of?
I believe we don't have a lot of time, but I still believe that we're in the window to be able to make this happen. We benefit from something. The healthcare industry has really stepped up and taken and said, hey, we made some mistakes. There's still some providers that are off, but most of the time you're going to see you're going to get a 5 to 7 day prescription. And if you're asked for more than that, turn it down. The American populace has become aware that opioids is a threat. And because of our isolation as a city, as an area, and a community that's still willing to come together, to work together, we have an opportunity that if all those stakeholders have come together, that we can intercede. We can't totally avoid it. We are going to suffer the effects of opioids. We are already suffering them behind closed doors to a much bigger extent than we understand. But we have a chance to stop it from becoming a full-blown epidemic and seeing the results that have happened in some other areas of the country.
I want to thank my guest today for talking about this important issue. I am sure this will be the first of many conversations we have about this on our program. Thanks again to Boise Chief of Police Bill Bones, Boise City Director of Community Partnerships Diana Lacciando, and State Representative Melissa Wintrow. Thank you so much for coming in and talking about this today.
Thank you, Jenna.
Thank you.